plate to potential nugget.
And moving forward, Pramath, for a minute, if I were to reflect on some of the entrepreneurial activity we are seeing, and in the limited interactions I've had, I see a lot of people who have a strong product idea, who've often come from a, let's say, one of the disciplines, right, whether it's engineering or science, who've stumbled upon the path of entrepreneurship. And clearly, as the organization scales up, they also need to scale up their leadership capability. And I was talking to Nandan Nilekani a few weeks back, and he was making the point that India has a lot of startups, but fewer scale-ups. And he alluded to what it took to develop the leaders. And if I may sort of go back to one of the earlier things you said, Pramath, about the work you do with Albright Stonebridge Group, which talks about just navigating complex ecosystems and stakeholders and the various things involved. Just give us an insight into how some of these young founders who come from, let's say, one of the domains now need to suddenly start building the leadership capability, which requires them to exercise many more muscles. What's your take on what does it take for them to individually scale up the leadership capability?
Well, I think Nandan is right. And I also feel that a lot of these startups not scaling up are really leadership failures rather than idea failures. And I think what people see are all the successes. So they see a Zuckerberg or they see a Jobs or a Gates. And some of these are examples of people who nearly didn't complete college. They did not do enough. They didn't have any entrepreneurial history either. And they hit it big. But, you know, that's almost like a lottery to my mind. I mean, these are extremely talented people and you have to give them credit for their persistence and so on. Equally, there are many, many more such talented people who didn't make it, right? We can't look at the example of these few people and say, all of us will be successful. And it's great that they are inspiring people to go on to start and so on. But there are two or three elements that people are missing out on. Number one, I have always believed, and I think it's true even if you study the lives of these people, that entrepreneurship is actually not about the idea. It's about being an entrepreneur, right? It's a way of life. And you have to love entrepreneurship and not your idea.
Interesting.
If you're an entrepreneur, then you will just persist. And you may start with one idea and you'll give it up and you'll pivot and you'll adapt and you'll go into adjacent spaces and so on. And that's how all these guys have been successful, if you study their history. I think a lot of the people who are starting ventures today are really one-trick ponies. And I don't mean it in a deprecating manner. They are so wedded to a particular idea they got that they're jumping in because they think this is the, you know, best thing since sliced bread. And the truth is that it may not be, and most often is not. And success lies in recognizing that and quickly pivoting. So that's the real essence of entrepreneurship, which they are not they're not aware of. So they think it's about the bright idea they have. I think the second thing is that being able to scale up your leadership skills is a hugely non-trivial task. Nobody has really talked about that to people. How do you manage just your peers, your top team, people who are more senior than you, more experienced than you, who you inevitably will need to bring in, your founding team will go away and so on. So these are not the issues that you worry about on day one. So you don't know. And you don't know what you don't know about yourself. So that's the other hidden factor that becomes very quickly limiting, where people are not able to retain other people. They don't know how to scale up, even if they have a successful idea. How do you solve for that? I don't know. I think on this, on the first one, I think you solve, I think on both you solve by mentoring. I feel that, and this is what people like Nandan and others I think are doing or trying to do, is some of these folks have to mentor other folks into being successful as entrepreneurs. And I think it's great that we have such a wave of entrepreneurship in this country. But it would be important for some of this learnings to be passed on from generation to generation. Because I'm not suggesting that you should not become an entrepreneur even without experience. And you should, of course, give it a shot. But you should be thinking about the right reasons for success or the right drivers of success. Which realization, I don't think, will come through a self-realization. It will only come through somebody being able to sit you down.
Who sort of seen the movie.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I think it's true not just for entrepreneurs, but for everyone. I think it's important to have good mentors. It's important to have the humility to say, listen, I really don't know this stuff. And I need to sit down with somebody to walk me through this. I think the other small or big problem I see these days is also that a lot of the investors haven't really been entrepreneurs. At least I remember I don't know what it's like in the US today, but in the early days in Silicon Valley and so on, the bigger VCs and PE guys had all been entrepreneurs. Right. They had actually either been entrepreneurs or they had been sort of involved in entrepreneurial organizations. They had worked and they had built.
Right.
They hadn't just been consultants like you and me, and they hadn't just been people who had been investing all their lives. And I think that somewhere you are not then able to provide that mentorship. You can bring in the money and the resources and how to scale up and, you know, examples of how to monetize and so on. And I think that's very valuable too. But finding people who can scale up leadership skills in proportion to how your business is growing is difficult.
True.
And you have had to live that life. I have seen that between two investors that I had in 9.9, my own venture, where one of the investors had actually built something from scratch. So some of his insights about literally how to scale up your own leadership, how to look at the scaling up of the business, how to think about leading a sales force, was very granular and very, very pithy, which I would have never learned.
Got it.
If somebody hadn't actually gone through that process.
Very interesting. And I was talking to Avnish Bajaj, who's an investor in Matrix Partners, who was an entrepreneur with Bazi.
Yes.
And it was interesting. We spoke about this briefly, and he spoke about the tightrope that the downside he spoke about was if you've done it, then there's a tendency to step in. So it's about bringing that empathy from the past, but without sort of micromanaging, which often...
which is why I use the word mentor.
Yeah.
Right. Mentors do this very well. As a mentee, you go to a mentor with a problem.
Right.
They will tell you, listen, if I were in your place, here's how I would do it. And then you as a mentee think about that. And you sometimes reject. You say, maybe this is the wrong context. You know, he was in a different era. And that could be your arrogance, or that could be your, you know, but you take a call. But at least you have input from somebody who's been there, done that.
Got it.
Rather than having to sort of figure it out yourself.
Got it. And a related point, Pramath, is as we think about the evolving, let's say, the business landscape and the complexity, if I sort of switch back to people in 40s and 50s who, in a way, built their leadership, for lack of a better term, let's say, in the industrial paradigm or sort of the traditional way of businesses, and now we are seeing this new way of dealing with new information, the sort of the velocity of decision making increasing in some of the industries. And as you look at some of your peers in other businesses who are CEOs, what have you seen good leaders do in terms of adapting well to the changing business context?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no one example, but I think that the people I have seen be successful are those who are somewhat reflective and introspective about failures and mistakes they made, where they focus a lot on what could be the learnings that they could take forward, and how does that, what does that mean for them personally in terms of their own behaviors and attitudes that they have to change. So I have seen some of the most successful people be much more reflective about these things. I think several of them have also then gone on to sort of expose themselves to more and more different situations, either within or in newer opportunities outside of whatever they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because they recognize that multiple experiences make you richer,
and
prepare you better for the future from
right.
a learning standpoint. I think several of them are using coaches, executive education programs, doing things with peers that are very focused on professional and personal development.
Right.
They seem to understand that self-actualization and finding purpose is not something airy-fairy or spiritual only, that it actually directly impacts your success and then satisfaction from what you do.
Right.
So I think there are a host of these things that I think people are realizing. I think it's tough though, because earlier you didn't need perhaps to do all of this in your work life.
Hmm.
You could do a set of things and be very successful and be quite mechanical and industrial about
right.
it.
Right.
And I think in some senses you can, in some contexts, you can still do that and be successful.
Hmm.
But in most contexts, that has completely changed on people. One, the kind of problems you are dealing with.
Right.
And two, the expectations that your own employees have of you.
Hmm.
People want a different kind of workplace.
Right.
They want a different kind of boss.
Hmm.
They feel almost entitled that they should all be very respected.
Hmm.
And that whatever they do should inspire them, and that they should be excited by the purposefulness of their work and so on.
Right.
So creating that kind of environment for wherever you work, and sometimes in very boring, seemingly less exciting environments, is tough as a leader. And how do you do that is a big challenge.
In my work with leaders, I find a significant difference between the leaders who are self-aware and those who aren't. And this shows up in two ways. One is the leaders who are self-aware are proactive and get a mentor or a coach to show them the mirror and keep chipping away on the blind spots and keep fine-tuning the leadership capability as they move along. Second, they have a strong conviction of the why behind the what that Simon Sinek often talks about. Unfortunately, these are things that are normally not taught as part of an educational curriculum. But when people start building out organizations, people who are brilliant but with low levels of self-awareness often take off like a rocket, but very soon start tapering off as they start leading teams and the battlefield starts shifting as they grow. Just recognizing that and working on themes such as awareness and purpose can be helpful as organizations scale up. Thank you for listening. For more, please visit playtopotential.com or subscribe on iTunes or other podcast apps.